Good evening, and hope all of y'all are not looking for some good news. We're going to first to start off with, remember 2016? Well, I will have to admit that what we're seeing a little bit in 2017 is not quite as bad. And that is some help, but it's not all gone away yet. One of the things that I know you can't see all of these things that are listed on there, but I'm just showing you what, when 2017, what we had put comments in on and things that are coming up. And so I'm going to hit a few highlights. I'm going to reinforce one little thing that Stanley and Larry's already quite well covered, and that is the dicamba issue. And you saw this slide already, but I want you to understand where I got this slide. This slide came from EPA presentation from their Office of Pesticide Policy to their, what they call the Pesticide Policy Dialogue Committee, trying to make some decisions on how they should move forward with regulating dicamba. This is what EPA is looking at, is these numbers. And EPA is not happy at all with these numbers. They're not happy at all with the acres that they're seeing. And you see a lot of that's not just down in the cotton belt. That's up in the soybean belt as well. And EPA is very, very unhappy with the publicity that's coming out of this. So no matter what your take may be on it, EPA's take is, if we see the same thing, there will not be another year. And I don't know how else to emphasize that to y'all. I made the statement last year that we got a 2-year registration. It's yours to lose. So far, I would have to say that we are running a close track to pushing the button to lose it ourselves. And we have to do a better job. Of course, you saw all the new label implementations and things that they have changed, so I'm going to move on past that and get over to the pollinator issue. The pollinator issue has not gone away and continues to be out there for the evaluation of all of these pesticide products. The EPA has still acknowledged these voluntary state managed pollinator plans, and the National Cotton Council continues to encourage these plans, because what this does is this gives us an opportunity for growers and beekeepers and consultants and ag aviators all to sit down at the local level, at a state level, and come up with solutions themselves to help regulate yourself rather than EPA imposing a one-shoe-fits-all. EPA made a press release that they were going to look at these things over the next couple of years and see if they think they are working, and then they'll revisit the issue. And it dawned on them that they've got to make a decision on, well, how do we look at it? So for the past year, I've been on the committee trying to figure out, how do you put metrics together for something that is a voluntary plan that varies state by state that have a lot of dissimilarities in a lot of ways? There has finally been an agreement on that EPA will be moving forward with, but I want to emphasize to you that the big point is communicate with the beekeepers and the growers and the people around in the local area to minimize attention and problems. That's on all of our in all of our best interest. EPA has been forced, though, to move into some pollinator risk assessments, and they first started out doing just the pollinator risk assessments, and then they moved into some on the neonics, and At this point, you can see that in January of 16, whenever they put out one of the pollinator risk assessments, they got 400,000 comments in on it. Whenever they put out the clothianidin thiamethoxam dinetoram, May of 2017, they got 60,000, 35,000, 36,000 respectively comments received in on those. This is letting you know that there is a large campaign group out there that is watching this extensively and making sure that they flood in comments trying to claim that these products are endangering the pollinators and endangering the health system. They put out the ecological risk assessment for aquatic species May of 2017, and they got the approximately 340,000 comments in. Now, I don't have those broke down as to how many of those were pro and con, but I can assure you that most of those were against the re-registration of those. On the organophosphates, and I'm going to give you some updates on some last-minute things on neonics in a little bit, but on organophosphates, I told you last year that they had a new study that they were given overweighted credit, and they were applying the study to all organophosphates, adding new safety risk factors based on this epidemiology study. They seem to be at a point of rethinking this and relooking at have they overstepped the bounds of the science of that study? So there seems to be some kind of stall at this time while they're trying to determine which direction what they actually can explain within this study and support on the science basis. You know that multiple states applied this past year for Section 18s on sulfoxaflor and intend to continue, I'm sure, but I just want you to know that at the same time that the EPA's Inspector General announced that it's preparing to open an investigation into the Department of Office of Pesticide Program over its process for granting emergency exemption on pesticide use. And when I asked some EPA officials, did that include some of the Section 18s on sulfoxaflor, they indicated, yes, that was part of this investigation. Some new neonic things that have come out is that they have revised the benefits assessment for soybeans. And it comes out looking a lot more favorably than the previous publication that they had released under the previous administration. A lot of that was due to a lot of entomologists putting in some comments and some data, and USDA putting in some data to tell EPA that they miscalculated and left out some very valuable papers. They have also released a benefits package, as they call it, for citrus, and benefits package for cotton pre-bloom and bloom periods. The reason for that is whenever they did their pollinator risk assessment for some of these neonics, they identified citrus and cotton as high-risk crops. So if you're going to look at it under FIFRA, you have to have a risk-benefits analysis. And what they put in the benefits analysis will have to be weighed against what they put in the risk analysis to see if we can maintain registration of those products. Those have been released for public comment, and I would encourage all of you to be willing to weigh in on those public comments. You can get copies of those documents off of regulations.gov or the EPA website. You can reach out to some of your extension entomologists if you don't know know how to get access to them, and they will help you, or reach out to me and I will help you. But we need to get some comments in on those to let them understand the benefits that those products have to cotton. They, at the same time, I think February 20th is an end for comments on this right now. There may be some extensions. All of this came out at Christmas, and you can see that they also come out with some ecological risk assessments for imidacloprid, clothianidin, a draft human health risk assessment for clothianidin and thiomethoxam, and dinetafurin. Worker protection standards changed. Everybody knows that, right? They totally revamped worker protection standards. Okay, but through the PPDC and some state help, they have realized there may be some components of it that they need to revisit. And so they have come out making a statement that in early part of the year, or actually the late part of 18, they have determined that further consideration of worker protection standard requirements for minimum age, designated representatives, and application exclusion zone is warranted for the rulemaking process. That means whenever they get some feedback in on this, they're going to put out a notice of proposed revisions, and they will open it up for public comments at that point. You know what the designated representative part says now? It basically says that if a person shows up on your farm and he has a paper that's been signed by one of your employees that said, "This is my designated representative," that's all he has to have, is a paper that says he's the designated representative, then he can request all of your application records for all pesticides for the year. Now, what does that have to do with any type of worker protection safety? It doesn't. Doctors and lawyers can get that information already. So that's where one of the problems are coming in on some of this. The certified applicator rule has been finalized as well, but EPA has identified an area of it that they say that they are going to revisit as well. They've initiated a rulemaking process to revise the minimum age requirements and the certification of pesticide applicators rule. And they said early 18 we should expect to see a rulemaking change come out. So we'll be keeping our eyes open for that to see what proposed change they come out with on that. Also, during Christmas, they released released their preliminary draft risk assessment of glyphosate, saying that this will soon be posted and open for comments, and it announces that the assessment concludes glyphosate is not likely to be a carcinogen. And if any of y'all have watched the news and you've seen that bouncing back and forth around in the EU and everywhere else in California as to whether or not it's a carcinogen or not, but EPA has gone back and reviewed all the data, so there's multiple countries that have come back out now and said the evidence says it's not likely to be a carcinogen. So EPA is in line with that, and that will be coming out. I've talked to y'all before about the Endangered Species Act consultation. How many of you remember the difference between the Endangered Species Act and FIFRA? One or two or three. So I'm going to give you the short version again. FIFRA says for EPA to conduct a certain number of these risk assessments every year, and they got to re-review a product after 15 years, right? Okay, so the Endangered Species Act says save the critters. And FIFRA says you got to look at risk versus benefits based on science and data. And the Endangered Species Act says save the critters based on your biological opinion. Now, for EPA to make a judgment, they have to, if it's something that could impact an endangered species, they have to go to Fish and Wildlife and get consultation and agreement on the final decision. EPA is based on science, Fish and Wildlife is based on biological opinion, and so there is a total conflict that they can't work through on how do we make this process so that we can move forward with registration of pesticides, which ends up getting it where that EPA takes an action to move forward without the completion of the consultation, and then they're sued and taken to court for failure to comply with the Endangered Species Act. So that system is still broken, and it's still resulting in multiple lawsuits, and there is a lawsuit out there right now that is has several of your seed treatments in question. A case that's, if you want to look it up on the web, is Ellis versus Rick Kegwin. And it raises some issues around some of the seed treatments for many of the crops. They are asking the court to vacate some registrations. I think the last thing that I wanted to talk to you, show you about is a move that you can find on EPA's website too, just so that you can start being aware. I'm kind of a little bit uncomfortable with this one right now, but this idea of a smart label and web distributed labeling for pesticides so that you can get the most current up-to-date label. Well, how confusing do you think that's going to end up being long run? I know some people that you're doing good to get them to take the label off the jug and read it, that they don't even have email accounts, and trying to get them to go on the web and find a label update is going to be even more of a challenge. So this is something that the agency is moving forward with. They've got some trial basis going on now. Internally, the agency procedures to improve clarity and enforceability of labeling content so that they can be very clear about some of this and up to date on some of it. So I just want to make y'all aware of some of these regulatory changes, some directions of some things, and I'd be happy to, I'll be around if you have any questions, be glad to try to answer. I want Steve Hensley. Where are you, Steve? Stand up in the back, Steve. Steve Hensley is the National Cotton Council's Science and Environmental Manager of Science and Environment. He's in our D.C. office. Steve and I work very closely on a lot of these regulatory issues. So if you have something that you want to talk about later, feel free to find Steve as well. The CDMS, as far as I know, most of those are up to date. Where they're going with some of this, these trials of things that they're working on now is that EPA is proposing that they could have some on-the-fly changes to labels. And there's some test cases of this underway right now. It's very preliminary, but there's some test cases underway. Any other questions? Thank y'all very much.